Okay, so as everybody who comes on the call from this point on knows, will know, the recording has begun for this particular call. If I'm not coming in clearly, so then please, somebody let me know if it's coming in choppy or whatever. I got to know, as that actor said in that iconic scene in whatever, Dirty Harry in the morning.
Yeah, you're coming in choppy.
No.
Can't hear you at all, though.
Okay.
As soon as you mention Dirty Harry, you can't choppy.
Please, if it's choppy, okay? If it's still choppy, please. Somebody, first let me just begin with a tefillah because it's good for me. Aloha. Nitzor l'shoni meira osfosai me da'ber mirma. Lim kalalai nafshi seidom nafshi kiol atvayla akol. Tehi atzitach adi besar sehu mitzitach adof nafshi. Kola kamim ha'chashim alai lala amin rafi ha'chi sam. Kama ha'sham tam. We ask in that tefillah a lot of things, which is that the tefillah l'kai nitzor has no shakas tishman esrei. It's just the tefillah stam that the Gemara says that an amora would say after shman esrei. It's not part of shman esrei or tefillah, the ikr. And it's mesugel for Bali Tshuva and stuff like that. It's a really nice tshuva. We're all Bali Tshuva in this respect, Bali Tshuva. Back in the old days, okay, they would say the term Bali Tshuva. Generally speaking, if I'm not mistaken, the term... Am I coming in choppy still, anybody? Am I coming in choppy or am I coming in kind of straight?
That's okay now.
Yeah, that's right.
Am I coming in clear or am I coming in choppy?
Clear.
Okay, thank you. So if it starts getting choppy at any time and anybody has a hard time hearing anything that I'm saying, then that means that the recording is also getting recorded in a choppy way so that nobody will be able to appreciate it. So, it might be the best thing, but I'd like to know one way or the other. Anyhow.
That's fine.
Maybe it's better that nobody hears this. So here's the deal. When they used to say Bali Tshuva, a lot of times, when they say, what does it say in Chazal? But Makom Shabali Tshuva Omed Ein Tzadik Gomer Yechol. So does that mean anybody who ever did any Avera, and therefore you're a Baal Tshuva because you did Tshuva on your Avera? That's how Guard Your Eyes would have you believe it is. Because frequently, in fact, implication that if you quit masturbating yourself, if you quit looking at pornography, if you quit following women in the street with your eyes, your heart, or walking after them, which is stalking, etc., then while you're driving, you stop looking at the women next to you and this, and you really quit, and you never go back to it again, then you're a Baal Tshuva, okay? Therefore, Makom Shebali Tshuva Om Demein Tzadikim Gemur Mecholam Lamod, and this is a very high Madrega, you're bringing Mashiach, etc., 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 because it's a tremendous school, a tremendous, unique, treasured thing. But I would submit to you that it's a little hard to say that when the Gemara meant the Mokim Shabali Tshuva Omdim Ein Tzadikim Gemurim Cholam La'amod, unless you take it extremely literally and you say Tzadikim Gemurim is a pshat that he never did an Avera in his life, he's a Tzadik Ben Tzadik, or he's a Tzadik Gomor, meaning that he's Mamish never did any Averis in his life. And the kasha of, well, then there's only four people who never did Averis in their life. Well, I mean, it's kind of funny. What does the Gemara mean when it says there are four people who never did Averis? That means that they're saying in Nevuah that there'll never be any more people that did Averis except for Binyamin and Yishai and this and that. You know, it's like, that's it. You know, it's like, what about the rest of history? What do they have? Nevuah? These people are Nevi'im? You know? Chacham Adif Minavi all of a sudden. And they know the truth even better, which is not true, that they know the truth better than a Navi does. It's just Adif Minavi, as the you know, Reb Chaim Volozhiner explains, it means that there are certain advantages. It doesn't mean that he's better in every way, obviously. Then why would anybody try to be a Navi? If almost, you know, if Ruach HaKodesh was flowing all over the place, especially on Sukkot, why would anybody be in Navi school? And we know that thousands of Jews were in Navi school, Navi yeshivas, in Eretz Yisrael in the old days. Why weren't they just getting Ruach HaKodesh and to heck with Nevuah? But anyhow, whatever. You know, you can frame for here and frame for there, and this can turn into Tilpo, of course, ad nauseum. But you know, whatever. B'makom shebali tshuva omdim. L'chora, it's a little hard to say that it means anybody who ever did it an avera. So then, the colloquial better way of understanding bali tshuva in this context may be then people who lived a lifestyle that was not frum, and they became frum. Okay, people who are not frum people, and they became frum people. So, you know, that seems a little more mustaber, that that's what it's referring to. You know, that people who were rishonim, you know, people who, most of the things that they were doing were bad, as the Rambam would define a Rasha, that most of the things he was doing was bad. In other words, let's say he did 1,000 deeds a day, and 501 of them or more were bad deeds. In other words, all the food that he ate, was not 90% of the food that he ate was not kosher. Not just didn't have, you know, the best hechsher, but, you know, okay, so he ate apples and drank water, so those things can't be not kosher, at least in Hutzlard. So, you know, fine, well, whatever. It's hard to be over on you know, Arla in Hutzlard. It's hard to, the summer, none of the fruit you get in the store are Arla in Hutzlard. But anyway, so hello. So, you know, the guys, you know, living a lifestyle, well, you know, so why? Because, you know, and the guy's not keeping Shabbos, so one day a week he's being over on dozens and dozens of deer rices, and he's being boil and nida, you know, and because his wife doesn't have taras mishpacha, so whenever that happens, you know, and every time that he sits in his, you know, that he touches his wife, he's over on lasik revula gala service, that's, is that a deraisa or is that a derabanan? Okay, fine. Or it's a deraisa, but okay, fine. So the guy's going around and on and up, and you know, he's living a lifestyle that's, so most of the things that he's doing, you know, he's certainly doing more averis than he is doing mitzvahs. How many mitzvahs is he doing already? I mean, the guy doesn't shake lulav, the guy doesn't daven chakras, he doesn't say shema, he doesn't say brachas after food, which is deraisa, or before food, which is derabanan. He doesn't do this, he doesn't do that. And so mistama, he's living a non-Jewish lifestyle, so more, he's doing more averis than mitzvah, so according to the Rambam, he's a Rasha. It's very simple. Is he a bad guy? No. This Rasha could be the nicest guy in the world, and he could sincerely want to do the right thing as much as any Rosh Yeshiva out there wants to do the right thing. Or as much as any good Jew like you or me, hopefully wants to do the right thing. You know, so he could be a great guy. A great guy can be a Rasha. Depends how you define a great guy. You know, so, I mean, you know, so this guy is Mestama a Rasha, and he does tshuva. He becomes religious, and so now more of his, the maisim are mitzvahs, and less of them are averas. So he's doing more mitzvahs than averas now, and therefore the Torah, according to the Rambam, calls him exotic, right? Because you're doing more mitzvahs than averus now. You're exotic. So this is a simple, I think I understand the Rambam this way, if I'm not mistaken. So, and there are many different ways to judge, because we Jews judge like crazy. So we need to judge. There's a, you know, we say that God judges us every day. That's why we say Baruch Aleinu, which is for Parnosa, even though Hashem was Kotzev the Parnosa in Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, and that was the end of that. So, but every day is a separate din for exactly how it happens, I guess. So, and there's different shittas on all that stuff. And the reason that we say Baruch Aleinu B'chlal is because there's a Machlokes Amoraim, Machlokes Tanoim about whether there is a din every day at all or not. It's not a glatt thing. We're machmir like the shita that says it's every day, and yet we still tout the Chazal that says that no, it's on Rosh Hashanah, who, and that shita holds that it's not every day. And there is no reason, you know, for there is no din every day on Parnassah, period. But we're machmir like both shitas, obviously. Now, is Hashem machmir like both shitas? I don't know. I don't know which opinion he holds by. Do you? I don't know. Does your Rebbe, you know, does the Gadol HaDor know, you know? Apparently the Amoraim didn't know, you know, so anyhow.
Do you?
So, pardon me?
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Don't you think that we should say Elu Ve'elu?
Yes, but Elu Ve'elu doesn't mean that. Yes, I understand. Elu Ve'elu is very nice, but Elu Ve'elu never. When it comes to Elu Ve'elu, that's with Divrei Musar, Divrei whatever, and even in Divrei Halacha, Hashem says, "Bini, you know, Yishmael Omer Kach, Bini Eliezer Omer Kach," and he's talking about Rabbi Eliezer Agadol and Rabbi Yishmael the Great Satana. And so he's saying Elu Ve'elu Divrei Kemchat, but one of them is the Psak. When we never paskin like both. What we do is we're machmer like one just in case, because we want to be mekayim both. But that's not because of Elu Ve'elu.
Yeah, but it's a bracha levatol. I mean, according to the shita that the din is on Rosh Hashanah, so the everyday tefillah is bracha levatol.
Well, according to the Arizal, there's no such thing as if I understand them correctly. A birchas ahoda'ah or a birchas shivach, there's certainly no true.
No, bakosh v'aruch aleinu.
Right. No, I'm saying baruch aleinu is a bakasha, but the bracha isn't a bakasha. The bracha of in all the brachas of Shemoneh Esrei, there's no bakashas.
Oh, I see. Yeah, very good. Yeah.
They're all baruch atah Hashem shamei tefillah. You are the one who listens to tefillah. It's not, please listen to tefillah. There's no bakasha in the Shemoneh Esrei, but I mean, except in the nusach, and that's not. But okay, but even if you're gonna say all this stuff, you know, and maybe it's true, and I, you know, I hear, hey, Elu Ve'elu, man, that's huge. That's a basic understanding of Yiddishkeit. That yes, there's such a thing as ta'a b'divar mishnah, where it's not divrei Elokim chayim, but there's, you know, there's Elu Ve'elu still. You know what I'm saying? So, I'm not sure how to answer that question in an academic kind of way, but in Lamaisa, I think that we generally either paskin like one, or we paskin like in the other, or we don't know, so we're machmer like both shitas. But you're right. If it's, you know, it's a little bit of a mess. There are people who will explain that it's not al se'elu ve'elu, it's the pshat that they both really agree and they're talking about different things, you know? So that's how probably people who write on the Siddur will probably explain how there's two Tanaim and there's a Machlokes and or there's a third Tana who has Taka Ashita that's reliable because he's a Tana, because his Masorah is for real, and, you know, more reliable than an Amora, and, or, you know, et cetera, down through the Doris. So, and his Shita is a mixture of both, so fine, we're all good, it's all good, okay. But my point, though, is Abyssal Andrus, really. My point is I'm trying to get to this idea of a Baal Tshuva, really. And a person who's a Baal Tshuva, who changed his way of living, seems to be more likely who this thing is talking about. The Makom Shebaal Tshuva Omdim, it makes sense that it means anybody who did an Avera. While I'm at it, I just want to throw in something. I want to end up addressing something that somebody said before the call, which is, where do we draw the line between the Yetzer Hara and addiction? Which is a fabulous question that I don't know the answer for, but I have some experience and things to share on that, and that's all I can do. And maybe that'll be the truth, and it'll be an answer. I don't know. But I can't say I know. What was I going to say there a minute ago? The emphasis on tshuva that I hear over and over and over, and I've posted on this topic on Guard Your Eyes since I came on Guard Your Eyes almost 10 years ago, 10 years ago or whatever it was, something like that, tshuva gemura is the thing that you hear about on Guard Your Eyes. That's what guys post about. That's what I hear guys posting about. When they talk about tshuva, they name as a dover pashit, that it's ba'osa yisha, ba'osa magam, ba'osa this, ba'osa that. And he's like, Nisayan, boom, then Hashem is mad that he'll never return to Kislo, etc., and all this other stuff. That it's tshuva gemura that we're after. Why are they after tshuva gemura? The answer is for the same reason that I was after tshuva gemura. That was the only thing I was after. Trying to wrestle with this stuff, which is just as bad as acting out. So, as the Kutzker would say, you get just as muddy. So when I wrestle with this stuff, and I'm struggling and smuggling and wuggling and everything, I'm not interested in stopping for today. Oh, no. I'm totally not attracted to stopping for today. You offer me a plan that's going to help me stay clean today. I'm not interested in it. I'm interested in tshuva gemura. Now, while initially I'll say, yes, it's kedai for me to just be clean for one day, even though I return to it for the rest of my life, it's kedai for just for me to be clean. Give me an answer to be clean the next 10 minutes, you know? But that's only initially. After I come to my quote-unquote senses, and my own motives kick in, it all changes. And want is, what I really want, what I'm waiting for, what I'm lusting for, if you will, is tshuva gemura. And that's the only thing that'll really satisfy me. I want to quit. That's the word, the quit. Alcoholics laugh about it. Chuck C. says in A New Pair of Glasses, his fabulous, fabulous six-part talk, from 30 years ago, whatever, 35 years, 30 years ago, 35, whatever it was. He says that I never quit. I never quit. Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I quit thousands of times. You know, I came finally, and I never quit yet. I haven't quit yet. Quit means tshuva gemura, that I'm never going to do it again. And as long as Guard Your Eyes, and it's not Guard Your Eyes' fault. It's not. It's Yidden who come on Guard Your Eyes, and, you know, Goyim who come on Guard Your Eyes also. They both feel the same exact way. I can't ever do it again, and if I ever do it again, it proves that I can't stop. Okay? And that is addiction. Because if you try the same thing again and you get the same result, so then that's addiction, right? So I can't stop, and powerless, they say powerless, mistakenly, they say powerless means I can't stop. So Okay, so the so that's a mistake. That's not what powerless means. Powerless doesn't mean I can't stop. When AA says I'm powerless over alcohol, it doesn't mean, it doesn't just mean I can't stop drinking. That's not the point of powerless. Powerless means, the focus of powerless, as far as I understand it in Alcoholics Anonymous and in other 12-step fellowships, is that I can't drink like a gentleman. Now, I've covered this in other calls, and I think I've covered it in the 12-part series on the steps that are recorded on Guard Your Eyes, which I would do over differently now if I can, because every year you...
Choppy.
Somebody please let me know, because then the recording isn't coming in clear either, and then this is permanently unclear, and that would be really, really sad. So please let me know if I'm not coming in clear, okay? Thank you so much. So please interrupt me if I'm not. Back to the point. So the meaning of powerless, as it's described in AA, if you read Alcoholics Anonymous, great book to read. great book to read. If you read Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll see that the point of powerlessness is that I can't drink like a gentleman. Others can enjoy this beverage, and for me, it's not a matter of enjoying it. It's that I need it. Yes, I can hold my breath for a while and not partake, because I have a lot of willpower. I may have a lot of willpower, but it avails me not when it comes to alcohol, because it just doesn't help me when it comes to alcohol. Because when it comes to alcohol, when it comes to my drug of choice, masturbation, let's say, then pornography, you know, whatever your drug of choice is, prostitutes, you know, whatever you're doing here. When it comes to my drug of choice, then I'm guaranteed to do it again. Not because I'm a sinner, and because any sadik baratz asher yasa tov v'lo yechata, which means that perpetually you're guaranteed to eventually probably sin. You know, that doesn't mean that we're all evil or anything like that. That just means that we're imperfect, and that's the way it goes. You have a good day, you have a bad day. It happens. Things happen, you know. So that's not the issue for an alcoholic, that things happen. The issue for an alcoholic is, or for a sexaholic, or for a gambler addict, the issue is that he needs to do it. He knows he needs to do it, or she needs to do it, and she's going to do it again. The question is only when, because I know I cannot drink and enjoy alcohol like a normal person. I can't enjoy lust and stuff, you know. I can't steal, lust is stolen sexual, you know, stolen erotic pleasure, that you steal it, that there's something wrong with it, there's something not healthy about it, it's not really yours, and you're taking it. Look it up in the dictionary. So you're desiring something outside yourself, something that's not really yours. That's Chazal, kol anos en eino b'masha eino shalo, ein nos din lo, v'af masha yesh lo notzelen heimenu. A person puts his eyes on what isn't his stuff, like the lady in the magazine or the naked lady on the computer, she's not mine, or the lady at the supermarket and I'm staring at her flowing whatever it is in her body and this and that, and she's not mine, ain't no stin low, you won't end up really getting it, because they're not yours. They're doing it for the money anyhow, even if you get them, quote-unquote. Va'af ma sheyesh lo, notzlin himenu, and what you've got, which is your wife, appreciation for your wife and enjoyment at home, notzlin himenu, they will take away from you. What's pshat they? Why doesn't it say Hashem, who notzel mimenu? Hashem will take away from you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's a lot of chazals that say HaKadosh Baruch Hu, blah, blah, blah. Why over here does it say notzlin, they? They. What's the they?
Do we believe in multiple gods or something all of a sudden? Why? Okay, maybe it means the malachim will take it away as a shlichus from God, but why does it say instead of him? What are malachim? Malachim are forces of nature. Okay, the malach of Esh is like all Esh. It's you know, these four, there are four malachim that refer to the four yesodos, the Shulchan Aruch says. So these, this means they, in other words, the forces of nature take it away from you. It's not mida keneged mida, that you lose what you've got because you look for something that's not yours. It's not a punishment at all. It's not a punishment at all. It's nature. Hashem made the world this way, that if you put your eyes on what's not yours, aside from the fact that you won't end up really getting it, you won't end up keeping it, you won't end up really having it, instead of just that pity, you're not even going to keep what you've got. You're going to lose what you've got because the things that you have will no longer be enjoyable by you, because you're going to have this crazy image of Olympic sex, and normal sex will not be interesting anymore. You know, you're going to have this crazy image of how a woman should look and how a woman should act, or how a man should look and how a man should act, etc. And now real will never satisfy you. My wife knows she cannot satisfy me. She knows that. It doesn't mean that she doesn't want to. It doesn't mean that she doesn't care. But she knows that it's a waste of time for her to try to go after every single desire I have and try to satisfy me. Because, number one, it'll kill her. And number two, she's not going to be able to do it. It's impossible to satisfy a drunk. And I'm a drunk. It's impossible. So then how do I have my wife, including intimately and sexually? How do we have each other if I'm a no saying da-da-da-da-da? So that's what a Baal Tshuva is in this context. That's a person who's surrendered that stuff, you know? A person who did an Avera and did Tshuva on it isn't what they're referring to when they say a Baal Tshuva, Omed, blah, blah, blah. It's a person who lived a lifestyle of sinning more averus than mitzvahs, so he's a Rasha, right? And somebody texted me, by the way, about the Tanya's definition of a tzaddik and a Rasha and this. That's not at all what we're talking about here, and the Balatanya's definition of tzaddik and Rasha is extremely narrow and doesn't fit, you know, most chazals that are talking about it, obviously, and he knew that. He's talking about tzaddik in Russia, not in terms of the allgemeiner general term, oh, you're a Russia, oh, you're a tzaddik. He's talking about a specific definition for a specific purpose because of his shita in avoda. And the Tanya is a specific, very rigorous and comprehensive shita, meaning shita is, for those who don't know, shita is a Hebrew word which means like a line, sort of, and it refers to like a path, you know, a point of view, a position on something, you know, a system, you know. This is a system. It's a specific system, you know, guided system to a perfection in serving God, which is what the Tanya, Baal HaTanya lays out for you in the derech that's, you know, that's called Chabad, which I'm not a member of, but those who are tell me about this, and I learn Tanya because I'm a Jew, and the Jew should learn Tanya. But anyway, in my opinion, just like I learned Divrei Chaim HaKadosh and the Shulchan HaKadosh and you know, Sfas Emes and you know, Michnev Meliyahu and you know, etc. and Nefesh HaChaim, and a Jew should learn basic Jewish Sfarim, you know. So, I mean, this is my opinion. So, I don't speak for Judaism or anybody else. So the guy is, coming back to the thing. So this guy who's a Baal Tshuva is somebody who lived in such a way that this was part of his lifestyle, obviously. And either like the Rambam, that most of the things he was doing were Averis, so he's a Rasha, and therefore he's a Baal Tshuva now. Or a person who, you know, eating cheeseburgers was something that was a general part of his lifestyle, and you know, he knew that he can't really live without it, because cheeseburgers take on a whole special meaning for him. Now, in reality, are there people who are doing a specific sin and that sin has a special meaning to him that, like, takes over his life? I doubt it. Okay? And this is where things get mushy. And this is where the dividing line is for me between addiction and sinning. There, I doubt that there's anybody in the world who sins with just one specific kind of avera, and all the other aspects of that avera in that category he's not even interested in. He just does that avera because it's an avera, and therefore he wants to do it, and therefore he can become, and therefore he's an, you know, I mean, I don't think that that exists, you know, and there are many examples of this thing. For example, a person who is, let's say, says that I'm a sexaholic, okay, because I keep being mako in touching my wife when she's anita. Okay? Not mako, I'm saying. You know, not mako. I mean mako on a personal level, but he keeps sinning in touching his wife when she's anita. Makes light of it. So, but he doesn't lust. He doesn't look at schmutz. He never masturbates. He doesn't look at porn ever. He doesn't fantasize about his wife, which is, giru yetzirah. He doesn't lo susuru, etc. He doesn't tell dirty jokes. He doesn't get involved in any other aspect of anything that has to do with lust of any kind. But he just touches his wife when she's anita. He doesn't touch her in a sexual way. He just hands things to her and their hands touch, you know, and he doesn't care. You know, that's not an addict of any kind. And that's not a bal tshuva of any kind, really, either. The guy just he doesn't have the midah of zahiris, you know, that's all. Not having the midah of zahiris does not make you a rasha. You know, you're just not a zahir, not that from, as the German, you know, as the word from means. You know, he's just not that strict. He's not that fastidious, you know, about his keeping of the commandments. And for sure, such a person will have many other areas which are unrelated completely to sex or, Taras Mishpacha, where he's also, quote-unquote, mako, you know, also not particular, you know. And okay, sorry, I thought I was disconnected there for a second there. Okay. And he's also doing those averis, you know, like he's taking pens home from the office too, or he says Lashon Hara too, or he, you know, once in a while when it's whatever, or he, you know, and it's not just like, it's the guy's just not careful. And he's not careful in this too. That's all, you know. So that's the case for many people, many of us. In some level, that's the way we are. If you start getting close to a Gadol B'Torah, you realize that you're like that. You do that, you know, and that applies to all of us probably on this call. You know, you realize that you, me, we're not careful. Now, as long as we're alone, that's the beauty of having a Rebbe. That's the beauty of having a Chavrusa. Oh, Chavrusa, oh, Misusa. If you don't have somebody else who's got a different level of care about different kinds of things who you associate with closely, so then you never see the other side. You don't see your deficiencies. And this has nothing to do with recovery. This is just in a general fashion. It's the way that you grow. This is the taina of the Netziv that got his book, My Uncle the Netziv, that was a translation of part of the Torah Tamima's book, got Art Scroll, had, you know, pulled it and changed, you know, part of the, text there, or they pulled it all together, because there's a line in there where he says, where he quotes the Netziv, his uncle, saying that the reason that the Rambam has so many stiras in it, can you imagine saying this to a brisker, the reason that the Rambam ended up with so many stiras in it and inconsistencies in the Lashon, where you see that there's a million gazillion places where the Lashon is perfectly consistent, amazingly, and yet there's so many Shvera Rambams because of other Rambams, is because he didn't learn B'dibur Chaverim. He didn't learn together, attached to other friends. He was kind of like on his own for much of the effort of writing the Rambam. Totally the opposite for the Rashba, who wrote his Tshuvas while he was in yeshiva among the other people. And there were Talmidim there who went back and forth with him, and they were edited, and you know, before he put them out, there was discussion, you know, and completely different than the Mishneh Berurah, which the Chafetz Chaim wrote with his, you know, kids and his Talmidim and this and that, you know, together. So, you know, is this a criticism on the Rambam? Ooh, I don't know, but I didn't say it, the Nitziv did. So, so you know, when you learn from another person things that you cannot learn from yourself. And obviously in recovery we use, but that's the Yerusha of everybody. So I'm digressing too much. So anyhow, let me get all the way back to the original point. If a person is sinning, you know, and doing a virus as part of a pattern, okay? Part of a pattern. Not just he's not so frum, you know? You're not so frum, so you masturbate once in a while. You're not so frum, so you also do other things once in a while, you know? That's not an addiction. That's called you're not as frum as you think you are. That's all, you know? And the schmutz feels good. So it's a little more tempting than, you know, lots and lots of other things that, you know, you want to do. So maybe you do it a little more often. So it's very confusing. Does that mean that I'm an addict? Does that mean I'm not? So I hate to say it this way, but if a website like Guard Your Eyes relies on the fallibility of humans to, and I'm not going to put this on Guard Your Eyes. It's not Guard Your Eyes' fault, I believe. If people rely on infallibility to give themselves a label of addict, you know, I'm sorry, not infallibility, fallibility. If people rely on their just fallibility to say, oh, you see, I must be an addict because I sinned again 6 months later. You know, I looked at porn for the first time again 6 months later. So I wasn't able to be a Baal Teshuva Gemura. I wasn't able to stay clean forever. And therefore, I must be an addict because an addict is somebody who can't stay clean and I can't stay clean. You've set up an insane test, litmus test for yourself, and said if I ever fall back again to doing this sin, then that means that I must be an addict. Well, that's not true. That doesn't make any sense. Try doing that with Lashon Hara, okay? And you'll probably not come out like the Chofetz Chaim, who says that as soon as I was Omed Al Daiti, not to be Nichshol in Lashon Hara, I wasn't. So, you know, that's probably not going to happen to you, okay? You know, our arrogance tells us that, well, if I put my mind to say, Ein Davar Omed Bifnei Aratzon, and, you know, I can do it, and we just get arrogant, you know? Or we're 15 years old, and we go, well, hold on. No, but Chazal do say, Ein Omed Davar Omed Bifnei Aratzon, so how do you fare in for that? It's like a big kasha. Reality is a big kasha, isn't it? Yeah, it is. Anyway, enjoy. So, it's called reality. Wake up. But as we get older, we realize it's not the way it works. You know, they say these things, but they're ideals. Okay, so you know, try. Good, try. They give you a direction. Try. Oh, you know. So nothing bad with it. Good. It's good to have a direction. So anyhow, So no, so the person ends up setting up for himself an impossible structure where he proves to himself that he's an addict because he's defined what addiction is in some crazy way. If this helps you do tshuva and quit, so then why would I want to stop you doing this? I don't want people to do averus. I'm a firm yid. I don't want people to do averus. Okay? But as an addict in recovery, I also I also don't want people to, who are addicts, for whom this stuff is a lifestyle, to be fooled and think that, you know, well, if he's redefining addiction for me, and that's what addiction is, and I'm really an addict, truthfully, and this definition that he's got of addiction is making me crazy, it doesn't work for me, then I don't understand addiction at all, and I'm just throwing away recovery and everything. I don't want the misinterpretations of the non-addicts, which have to come to the non-addicts because they don't have any choice because they're not addicts, so none of this stuff is really going to make sense, so they have to interpret things. They have to interpret powerless as the Chazal that says, they have to reinterpret powerless as the Chazal that says, the Yetzer Hara il mole ozro eino yochalo. So that means I'm powerless because you see Chazal say we're powerless against the Yetzer Hara. They have to redefine what powerless is and say that's what the Chazal mean when they say il mole ozro eino yochalo, that we're powerless against the Yetzer Hara. You know? So they misinterpret the whole picture, and based on the definition of powerless, we're all addicts. Everyone's an addict, you know, everyone, because no one stays clean from practically anything all the time, you know, and your definition of tshuva then has to be tshuva gemura is the bottom line definition of tshuva instead of tshuva gemura, which is a madrega in tshuva, you know, a part of tshuva, you know, a specific representation of tshuva, a part of tshuva, a level in tshuva, as it were. Instead of that, you define it as tshuva, that this is what tshuva is, that you never come back to it again, which is what happens when guys lust after the ideal of tshuva gemura. They start to lust after it. It becomes a necessity. It becomes an obsession. It's lust, just like sexual lust. It's lust. That's it. There's nothing holy or good about it. It's avodas atzmi. It's not avodas Hashem at that point. And we can be extremely from great guys making siyums on shas, and it's not avodas Hashem. It's avodas atzmi. Like the Sfasema says, Visem kedoshim lelokeichem. Hashem doesn't want kedoshim. He wants kedoshim lelokeichem. He wants you to do it for him, not for your schar in olam haba. For him. Doing a mitzvah for God means you're not doing it for the schar. Period. That's why many tzaddikim would say, echshik daraindem schar, before they did a mitzvah, they would say, I send away the schar completely. I don't want any part of it. Before they did a mitzvah. Many tzaddikim would do that. So there's an understanding of why Hashem wants you to get the schar and why some tzaddikim did it happily to get the schar because they want Hashem's plan to come to fruition, etc. That's what he wants. It's, you know, fun. But that's a different madrega, you know. If I'm greedy for money, if I look at money differently, then how do I look at schar honestly that way? That's not the way you are. Sorry. That's the way Moshe Rabbeinu was, you know. That's the way certain few people are. That's not the way you or I are, period. So let's not, you know, play games with that. So the guy, once you define tshuva gemura this way, once you define tshuva as tshuva gemura, then it fits together with this definition of powerless that guarantees that you'll always be an addict. And once an addict, always an addict. It's misinterpreting everything. It's twisting the whole thing around into some other program, some other religion, and everything. It's just, wow. And it's self-perpetuating because nobody can stay clean forever, and therefore they're all addicts, and therefore they have to do tafsik shvuas and, you know, whatever. And the whole thing is nuts. So if you're an addict, then you see two things. One is there's a pattern where there's progression, and that when you use your drug, whatever it is, you don't use it for recreational enjoyment. You use it for out of necessity. I can't recall any time I've ever used schmutz where it was fun. I can't recall any time that I've used that stuff, that I've used my drug and felt happy using it. You know, like You know, but I can recall many times doing something that I enjoy and feeling quite happy doing it. There was tremendous pleasure in it, so isn't that enjoyment? Well, you know, let me ask most of you guys who you know, or you know, ladies, whatever, who have problems in this area, and you know, and you have, and you're married, and you're having, and you're, you know, what's the big sexual problem that y'all are having? One of them is not so interested. One of them is more interested here and there. You know, so why has that come about? So everybody says, oh, it's because she was never interested, because he was never interested, because of this and that. No, no, no. It's because once you start getting into this schmutz, until you surrender it and turn your back on it and move in the other direction, which only happens, as far as I know, in togetherness, with, in fellowship with other real-life people, in recovery, not wearing a bag over my head and calling myself Tshuva 613 and Gingerbread Man or something. But once you turn your back on it and you move in another direction and you get therapy and other help that you need, whatever it is that you need, 12 steps, recovery, whatever it is, you get help to surrender this stuff and live on a different, in a different way. Until you do that, if you're not doing that and you're just fighting the desires because you're a holy Jew, you know, and you fight desires, which is great. It's a very nice madrega. Not that it works, but it's a very nice madrega. So you're fighting these things, and then what happens? You have these expectations in your heart still. You can't be at peace. So sex turns into, as every married person listening to this thing who is even close to being an addict knows, sex turns into something very serious and important. Serious and important doesn't quite fit real life marriage, especially if you're married to a person. If you know you're young, you know, young people want to have fun. Hello, you know, old people want to have fun too. But sex isn't supposed to be serious. It's not supposed to be deep, serious, and this and that. And then the religious stuff feeds into it, and it becomes even more serious. Well, this is Zivug, I'm going to say the Ginas Egos, Tfila, of the Ramban, and here and there, and it's so serious, and Leil HaZivug, again and here, and I'm going to do the mitzvah. And it's like, oh my God, you know? Well, is it working for you? If it's working for you, great. Great. If it's working for you, great. I'm not criticizing what works. But if you're looking at porn here and you're saying Ginas Egos Tefillah's over there, and you're crazy. You're a liar and a fake. And the biggest problem of from sexaholics, from masturbators, from porn users, whether they're men or women, etc., if you're from and you're a porn user, your biggest issue is not the Avera, even though that's what you make the biggest issue of. The biggest issue of it is that we're liars and fakes. And if you're a guy, you're not as much of a fake unless you're religious. If you're a Yid who's not religious, you're not as much of a fake. So if you're a porn Jew, you're a bigger fake than anyone, to yourself and to other people. And this isn't a criticism. I love you. I'd give you a hug, and I'd say, smiling to you, your biggest problem is that you're a fake, and I love you. This isn't a criticism. I'm not looking down on you or me.
So you're fading out. You're fading out.
I'm fading out? I don't know why.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I don't know why, I'm sorry. Thank you. So the problem isn't the sinning. The problem isn't the desire, and the problem is the faking. That's the first thing that has to change, is the faking. Learn how to go the opposite way with the faking. I use fellowship with other addicts, okay, as a venue where I can always find openness with my fellows. Guard Your Eyes says come out of isolation, but you're still wearing a bag on your head, calling yourself Yaakov, Moshe, Yitzchak, this and that, when your name is really something else. You know? You're not being real. So you're not going to get the fruit of that you really, really want. Okay? Come on Guard Your Eyes, use Guard Your Eyes, find people who are in recovery. Take your time. Find people who are in recovery. Get to know them slowly. And then check them out slowly over time. And if you see that they're not crackpots who are looking, you know, for, you know, to make trouble, then you can get to know them more, and you can share emails eventually, and you can become real friends. Now, a disclaimer is that on Guard Your Eyes, I've observed numerous times people chatting and emailing and eventually emailing other people for purposes of sex, okay? Because they want to either verbally or sexually molest them, or because they're looking to hook up sexually, or because they just want to talk about lust because it turns them on, or whatever. And this is going to happen, you know? But if you want to find the right people, so then look for the right people with your seichel. Use Einei Sechlecha and daven for Siyata Dishmaya, and do your best, you know, and try to connect with people who are really free. Now, a person who is, has never masturbated in their lives or did it once, and since then they've been, you know, jumping on top of trucks, singing, and trying to prevent averus from being done in the world because they want to bring Mashiach, is a very good Jew, but he might not be the right person for you to connect up with because he's just trying to tell you what to do and giving you giant platitudes. He might not really be helping you where you are. And the Baal Shem Tov said, the Maggid explains what the Baal Shem Tov said, you can only serve Hashem from where you are. So this idea of I'm going to talk to somebody who's on a high madrig, I'm going to talk to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Reb Chaim Kanievsky can't help you, okay? Because you got to find somebody who's as dirty as you are, but clean now. You know, who's as messed up as you are, but clean now. You can find somebody like that who's clean. That happens. You know, that happens. I happen to, in Sexaholics Anonymous and other sex addiction fellowships, we have that, thank God. We have people, many, 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 many people who are clean for a long time. And you can find that kind of support, honesty, place to open up about the truth about yourself. So then, coming back to the point. So to me, the idea of sitting here, sitting there, I do an avera, I do a there, okay, and one of the averas that I happen to do once in a while is a sexual avera, that's an unfair way to use the steps. That's an unfair approach to addiction and recovery and all this other stuff. It's not. You're not an addict. You're just a sinner like everybody else. You do averas sometimes. As the Vidui book, that's Nafutz B'chol Tvutzis Yisrael, who are English-speaking, says, which I think Reb Zelig Pliskin wrote, but his name isn't on it, the thing that people were using through the 80s and 90s, everybody was using it, about Vidui, he writes in there, it helps to view yourself while you're saying Vidui as a sinner. That sounds like a Christian thing, doesn't it? But it's not, okay? Ashamnu Bagadnu, etc. I thought Sofer LaRusha, you know, V'chofetz B'Hitzadko, who's that talking about? The jerk next to me who's a Russia? No, it's talking about all of us. So that's what we say on Yom Kippur. So is it not true the rest of the year, really? Nah, but we don't want to focus on that, except on Yom Kippur, and that's fine, 100%. But Lamaisa, for me, everybody does Averis once in a while, and if you once in a while do Averis in this area too, you're a man, you're a woman, you have desire. It's going to happen sometimes. That doesn't make you an addict. What makes you an addict is that there's a pattern. What makes a person an addict is that they see that there's a pattern. They see that there's progression over time. Even though they get better this week, that doesn't show that there's no progression. Look over 2 years. Look over 10 years. Look over since you started. Look over your history. Write your history down on paper from the first time that you started it. Okay? And look at what's going on, you know? Look at what's going on. What's the pattern over here, you know? And see, you know, is there a pattern? Is it coming into different areas of my life, you know? Is it involving my marriage? Is it involving this? Is it involving that? Is there progression? You know, is it a whole constellation of things? Am I lusting in different scenarios? You know,
Is it a challenge at work with the internet, the accursed internet? Is it in the bedroom with my wife? Is it here? Is it there? You know, if masturbation and porn use became a habit that you did during all the years that you weren't from, and now you became from, and you have tremendous holiness and tremendous impetus, and you know, to be good, and so therefore you've cut down tremendously, you know. To me, that's not proof that you're not an addict, because it might be laying dormant until you get married. And then when you get married, the whole thing might come out, because when you start involving yourself in real sex, then it kind of cracks the filter. And then we'll see. You think you're going to get married, it's going to get better? Often, when an addict gets married, it just gets worse, okay? It just gets worse. Marriage only makes it worse. And if there's shalom bias problems, if you see that your acting out increases, that doesn't prove that you're an addict, except it proves that there's something else going on here than mitzvahs and averas. Who does more averas because they have stress at work? So therefore they start tearing the toilet paper on Shabbos because they have stress at work? Because, you know, because you lose, you know, peace of mind, so therefore you start eating treif? Like, what? That doesn't make any sense, you know? So yes, there is a certain element of I start getting upset with shalom bias, I start having tzoros with my job at work, and therefore I have no satisfaction in life, so I'm looking for pleasures to do. And that's not addiction necessarily. True. But the question is in degrees, and what are you doing as a result of that now, you know? Is it bringing back the stuff that you used to do? Is it worse than the stuff that you used to do, you know? Does it feel recreational, and do you feel like it really helps you and that it's completely under control, you know? I mean, these are all questions to ask in the situation, you know? And then let's say if a person has an addiction and they're Rav and they speak to their Rebbe, the tool that their Rebbe can give them can be destructive or it can be helpful. If the Rebbe or the therapist gives them a tool that helps them with self-control, and the reason that they're acting out is because of some deep need that this person has for a feeling of being alive, ameliorating his fear of death. You know, whatever, you know. Or the person, you know, doesn't know what the reason is, but they've always done it, you know. They don't know what the reason, you don't have to know what the reason is to stop, that's for sure. And most of us never find out what the reason is in recovery. There's no holy grail like Tshuva Gemura is. There's no holy grail of figuring out why I do this stuff. That's Narishkeit. But the guy gets aitzes to how to stop the behavior. All it's going to do is make other tzaras happen.
And we can't hear you now.
I think the recording went off. Anyway. What about the company? Are you there?
Yes, it is. Okay, go ahead.
What about the confidentiality? You said you shouldn't have too many names. Are you allowed to have confidentiality with a different name? I understand that part. Anyway, it's you and me. So you get some clarity. You have any questions? Anybody have any questions? Hello? Any more questions?
No, we can't hear you now.
Any questions? Yes or no? No questions. Okay, no questions. I think you have to go. I think it basically, the recording stops at 1 hour. That's what I think. Okay, Zagazint, have a beautiful day. And be besimcha. If one thing you didn't mention, it's simcha. You must be besimcha. You do it. You do Hashem besimcha. David should love you. And that's the ikka. Have a great day.
Hello? Hello?
Who's there? You are there?
Hello?
Yeah, hello, yes. This is Lubakish.
Is Dov around?
No, Dov, he left. I think he left.
Oh, okay, very good, no problem. Okay, thank you very much for the recording. Excellent. The first time I can be online, I can listen on direct, but it's excellent. Thank you very, very much.
Where are you from?
From the UK.
Beautiful, very nice. Yeah, he's amazing. Dov is amazing.
Yeah, really amazing.
He's one of a kind, Mamish one of a kind. All right, Zagabench, good luck.
Thank you, Kutu. Bye-bye.